Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is the Radio Free Kansas.
Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Kansas.
Kansas.
Let's talk about
Radio Free Kansas out of North Jefferson County, Kansas.
Common side effects include heart failure, persistent fever, bruising, bleeding, lymphoma, nervous system, and blood disorders.
The message is now part of and registered in your subconscious mind. Every time you say, see, hear, or think.
Radio Free Kansas.
That's your key phrase. It will trigger the entire message without your being aware of it.
Oh, man, that is just wrong.
If you wish to survive, you need to cultivate a strong mental attitude.
It's a fool who looks for logic in the chambers of the human heart.
Wonderful day here. Overcast. 33 degrees. December 1, the 1st of December, a new month. Here in North Jefferson County. North Jefferson County, where it's all happening here. It's all happening out here, folks. It's not in Lawrence. It's not in Kansas City. Huggable Kissable You, Volume 1, Track 15 of Naughty Songs of the Roaring Twenties. That would be the roaring 20s of the previous century, which is all we play here at Radio Free Kansas, your voice of Kansas. Like I said, it's 33 degrees Fahrenheit out here in North Jefferson County, where it's all at. But let's not forget, December 4th, Liberty Hall, the 40th anniversary of the making of the movie The Day After, where basically the planet is liquidated of all life through nuclear war. The made-for-TV movie that shocked 100 million viewers on NBC and then shocked another 100 million citizens of the Soviet Union. Oh, my goodness. The 40th anniversary at Liberty Hall in Lawrence, dear old Lawrence, gentrified as it is, Lawrence, Kansas. It'll be in the evening, beginning around 6:30. You can get in. $12, I guess. $12 to get in. Daniels, the director and maker of a documentary film called The Television Event, will commemorate it. A documentary. It's what it's called, The Television Event. It was sort of confusing at first. But it's a documentary about The Day After, the making of The Day After, and the effect, the after effect of the movie, The Day After, made in Lawrence 40 years ago. Well, and if you want more information, you can go back a couple shows and look at Nicholas Meyer. His name is Nicholas Meyer, TUC Radio, at the headline. That's where I have a conversation with the man who directed the movie. Made for TV. And it was a shocker. Well, we've got a regular lineup here, Free Thought Friday, from the Freedom from Religion Foundation out of Madison, Wisconsin, coming up. But first, we've got to have, you know, there's big things happening with the climate summit being held courtesy of the United Nations. So we'll hear a little bit about that here on this News in Brief clip. And I think I have I think I have an interview to follow. Here's the News in Brief from the United Nations.
This is the News in Brief from the United Nations. 2023 is due to be the hottest year in human history, and the world is on course for climate collapse in real time, UN Chief Antonio Guterres said on Thursday. In a video message to the COP28 summit in Dubai, the UN Secretary General issued an urgent appeal to governments to get us out of deep trouble. The UN Secretary General's comments follow recent visits to two global warming hotspots, Antarctica and Nepal, where he expressed his shock at the speed of receding glaciers. Latest climate data just published by the UN World Meteorological Organization, WMO, indicate that the maximum Antarctic sea ice extent for the year was a staggering 1 million square kilometers less than the previous record low. Concentrations in the atmosphere of heat-trapping carbon dioxide, methane and nitrous oxide also reached a record high last year and continued to increase in 2023, the UN agency said. A last-minute extension of the pause in fighting in Gaza between Israel and Hamas on Thursday offered hope that UN humanitarians and aid partners will be able to pursue their efforts to reach the enclave's most vulnerable people. The latest update from UN Aid Coordination Office OCHA indicated that two hospitals in Gaza City, Al-Ahli and Al-Sahaba, had received a total of 10,500 litres of fuel, which is enough to operate their generators for about 7 days. But humanitarians have warned that despite the pause in fighting, much more aid is needed, urgently. They also warned that there has been almost no improvement in access to clean water for residents in northern Gaza after most of the main water production facilities shut down through lack of fuel or damage from Israeli airstrikes launched after Hamas's 7th of October terror attacks that killed 1,200 and took another 240 hostage. The 30th of November marks the Day of Remembrance for all victims of chemical warfare. It's also a day when UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres insisted that we should resolve to end the use of these repugnant weapons once and for all. In a social media post on X, the UN chief said that in the name and memory of all those who have suffered, let's consign chemical weapons to history. International efforts to eradicate the illegal munitions are led by the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. The body meets in The Hague to discuss progress in chemical weapons disarmament, which emerged as an issue more than a century ago, during the First World War, when chemical weapons such as mustard gas were used on a massive scale, resulting in more than 100,000 fatalities and a million casualties. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Now here's an interview from, I believe, COP24, the climate change meeting.
The latest WMO report has just come out. Could you please tell us what are the key findings of the report?
One of the key findings is that this year is going to be the warmest year on record. We have already achieved 1.4 degrees warming, and that's so far the warmest year since 1850. We have also broken records in main greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, methane and nitrous oxide, and carbon dioxide we are now 150% above the pre-industrial concentrations. And we have started seeing growing amount of disasters related to weather, and in many parts of the world we have broken less comfortable temperature records in Japan, parts of Asia, in Europe, in North America, and also parts of South America. And we have seen a boost in the melting of glaciers. For example, in Switzerland, we have lost more than 10% of our glacier mass during the past two summers only, which is a record so far. And when it comes to global sea ice, we have seen a record low amount of sea ice in the Antarctic area, which is a new finding. In the Arctic, we have seen this declining trend only for a long time. And then we have seen forest fires in Canada. They faced their biggest forest fires since they started their recordings. And also in Hawaii, we had very devastating forest fires. And in Europe, we have seen both drought and heat waves hitting most parts of southern and central part of Europe. And then we had very severe flooding events, which was hitting Greece, Turkey, especially Libya, where we got more than 10,000 casualties.
2023 is going to be, or on track to be, the warmest year on record, but last 8-9 years have also been the warmest.
So the last decade has been the warmest decade on record, and this is going to be the warmest year on record, since 1850.
So what does this trend tell us, and why should it worry us?
So this is demonstrating that we are already fairly close to the low limit of Paris Agreement, 1.5 degrees. And many countries would like to keep us at the 1.5 degrees warming, which would be the best for the welfare of mankind and biosphere. And unfortunately, we are already fairly close to that limit, at least on temporary basis.
To keep the 1.5 degrees goal alive, we need to cut greenhouse gas emissions. But adaptation, building resilience is equally important. What is the progress like on the early warning system initiative, which was launched by the Secretary General last year, which promises to bring everyone under the umbrella of early warning systems by 2027. What has been the progress so far?
Besides mitigation, as you said, it's very important to pay attention to adaptation, because the negative trend in weather patterns continues until 2060s, independent of our success in mitigation, and sea level rise and melting of glaciers game we have already lost, that may continue for the coming thousands of years. And one very powerful way to adapt to climate change is to invest in early warning services to avoid loss and damage, which is also one of the big issues here in Dubai. And we have already started investments into improvement of basic observing systems, which are needed for the input of the early warning service forecasts. And we have already chosen 30 countries where we are working this year and next year. And those are mostly African countries and island states, both in Caribbean and Pacific, and some individual countries elsewhere. And the aim is that we would cover 100 countries by the end of 27. And we are thankful that many donor countries have decided to allocate financing for that purpose. And also players like Green Climate Fund, they have already allocated some money, and they are planning to invest quite a bit to improve the situation. Also, our colleagues in World Bank, they have a program to invest in such activities. And then we have individual donor countries who are doing this on bilateral basis. Japan, China, Australia, New Zealand, Finland, for example, are doing it on bilateral basis. And the aim is that by having proper early warning services in place, we could avoid both human losses and also economic losses related to growing amount of disasters caused by climate change.
And against this backdrop, the Dubai Climate Conference is opening today. What is your own on your wish list for this conference?
So I think that since the key issue in climate mitigation is that we should get rid of fossil fuels, coal, oil and natural gas, that there would be recommendations that we should stop using fossil fuels, which is the 2/3 of the problem, and also since the lifetime of carbon dioxide is so long, it's important to limit those activities which are leading to the rise of carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere.
My last question is on your experience as the leader of the UN Weather Agency. You have led it for so many years, and as you mentioned that this has been the warmest decade so far. So how challenging was that, or what's the pathway ahead for the agency?
So I've been, of course, privileged to lead this organization for the past 8 years, and we have paid attention to the climate science, and we have started bringing the facts on the table of climate negotiators and governments, and I hope that this has been one component which has been motivating the countries to raise their climate action ambition level. And then we have been helping our less developed countries in improvement of their climate adaptation skills through this early warning services for all. And we have also started paying attention to global water resources, what's happening to the water availability, and for example this melting of glaciers is one of the challenges that we are facing. Most of the mountain glaciers will be gone by the end of this century, which means that we will have less and less water for main rivers at all continents. And I have been very pleased to work with very talented people, and have also very good cooperation with players like Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who has been very much behind our activities and very important partner for us.
Well, from the Worldwide Summit of Climate Change, sponsored by the United Nations, I believe in Brussels, coming up tomorrow, Saturday.
This is Carl G. from the Abolitionist Hour, every Saturday, 12 p.m., where we broadcast the news that you won't find on cable. Ever wonder what Gen Z is up to? Have you heard of Generation U? Ever wonder why the old geezers are excited that something's going on since their days of living underground and avoiding the Vietnam draft? We cover these topics on the Abolitionist Hour, and we kind of give you updates on the front, whether it's Atlanta, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Kansas City. We'll keep you updated on news and information on the state of dismal prison conditions and why the Jackson County Jail is not just a stockade, it's a phone company. So join us at the Abolitionist Hour, only on Blog Talk Radio, 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll see you there.
And from the plains of Royal Mead, drunk men came hurrying through, while Britannia's Huns with their long-range guns came in through the foggy tears. Back to the glen I rode again, and my heart with grief was sore. For I parted them with valiant whom I never shall see more.
Yeah, that's a great show. Saturday, the Abolitionist Hour. You never know what Carl's going to come up with. Actually, it's pretty predictable from an anarchist, anti-fascist point of view. Here's the latest headlines from Democracy Now! This morning.
This news is funded by viewers like you. Please support our work at democracynow.org/give. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's agreed to extend its truce with Hamas for a seventh day to facilitate the exchange of captives. The extension was announced just minutes before it was set to expire Thursday morning, prolonging a reprieve for Gaza's 2.3 million residents after 47 days of relentless attacks by Israel spawned a massive humanitarian crisis. On Wednesday, Hamas released 16 hostages, 10 Israelis, 4 Thai nationals, and 2 Russian-Israeli citizens. In exchange, Israel released another 30 Palestinian women and children prisoners, many of them jailed indefinitely without charge under Israel's administrative detention policy. On Wednesday, Hamas said its youngest Israeli hostage, 10-month-old Kafir Bibas, was killed in an Israeli bombing alongside his mother and 4-year-old brother. If those deaths are confirmed, the hostages join some 15,000 people killed by Israel's assault on Gaza since the October 7th Hamas attacks. 2/3 of the dead are women and children. Also on Wednesday, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza said it had discovered the decomposing remains of 5 premature Palestinian babies left to die after Israeli forces ordered medical staff to evacuate and blocked access to the intensive care unit at the Al-Nasser Pediatric Hospital in North Gaza. Shocking footage filmed by the Dubai-based outlet Al-Mashad shows the babies still attached to ventilation and intravenous tubes as they lay lifeless in their hospital beds. Rights groups are calling for an international investigation. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli gunfire killed a 21-year-old Palestinian man and wounded 4 others as they gathered outside Ofer prison awaiting the release of Palestinian prisoners. Meanwhile, 2 Palestinian children who were shot dead by Israeli forces during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp Wednesday have been identified. 15-year-old Basil Suleiman Abu Awafa died in a hospital after he was shot in the chest. And 8-year-old Adam Al-Ghul was shot in the head as he ran from Israeli forces in a killing that was captured on video. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society said Israeli soldiers blocked medics from approaching the camp to tend to the wounded. Israeli police say 3 Israelis were killed and several others wounded Thursday morning when a pair of Palestinian gunmen opened fire at a bus stop on the outskirts of Jerusalem. The attackers were shot and killed by 2 off-duty soldiers and an armed civilian. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has pledged to resume Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip once Israel's ceasefire agreement with Hamas expires.
After completing this stage of the return of our hostages, will Israel go back to fighting? My answer is an unequivocal yes. There is no situation in which we do not go back to fighting until the end. This is my policy. The entire cabinet is behind it.
Netanyahu's comments came after Israel's far-right national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, threatened to dissolve the coalition government led by Netanyahu if Israel halts its bombardment of Gaza. Here in New York, hundreds of peaceful protesters led by a group of interfaith organizers gathered in Midtown Manhattan to demand an end to Israel's assault on Gaza and its occupation of Palestinian lands on the occasion of the annual Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting ceremony. Hordes of police officers were deployed to the event as activists ultimately gathered in front of the nearby News Corp building to rally. This is Nardine Kiswani of the group Within Our Lifetime.
We stand here on the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, in solidarity with Jerusalem's 13 official churches and the entire municipality.
Nardine Kiswani outside Fox. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., progressive Congress members Rashida Tlaib, Cori Bush, and Jamal Bowman joined a group of activists, politicians, and celebrities who were on day 3 of their hunger strike to demand a permanent ceasefire. This is Congressmember Tlaib speaking at their nightly White House vigil.
When this pause and the violence expires, all I keep thinking about is asking my colleagues, how many more lives? How many more lives will be enough? How many more children need to be killed? How many more families have to be traumatized and torn apart? There is nothing humanitarian, my friends, about giving innocent civilians a few days of rest before they are bombed again.
Earlier in the day, House members voted nearly unanimously to pass a resolution equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, a framing which has driven the backlash against anyone who's critical of the Israeli government. Only Congressmember Thomas Massey voted against the measure. Congressmember Tlaib voted present. Employees and job seekers continue to report retaliatory action for speaking out against the conflict. Georgetown Law School graduate Jinan Chahadi says she had a job offer with the prominent law firm Foley and Lardner rescinded over her support for Palestinian rights on social media after she was interrogated by the law firm's partners.
They framed my advocacy for Palestine as supporting terrorism, and I was singled out as one of the only visibly Arab Muslim woman associates in the law firm nationwide. Today, I'm speaking in defiance of the surge of attacks we have been seeing against Palestinians and their allies, from the murder of 6-year-old Wadi Al-Fayoumi to the shooting of 3 Palestinian students in Vermont, to severe attacks on employees and associates like myself who speak up for Palestine. However, the more of us that speak up, the more power we have. So today, I'm not only speaking up, but I'm fighting back and pursuing legal action.
Palestine Legal says it's received more than 700 requests for support from advocates for Palestinian rights since October 7th. That's triple the number the group reported for the entire year last year. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, the architect of a highly militarized U.S. foreign policy under Presidents Nixon and Ford, has died at the age of 100. In the late 60s and 70s, Kissinger oversaw a massive expansion of the war in Vietnam and the secret bombings of Laos and Cambodia, where as many as 150,000 civilians were killed. In Latin America, Kissinger supported dictatorship that used torture and murder as tools of political repression, from Bolivia to Uruguay to Argentina. In Chile, Kissinger helped topple the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende, ushering 17 years of dictatorship under General Augusto Pinochet. In 1975, Kissinger and President Ford met with the Indonesian dictator General Suharto, giving him the go-ahead to invade East Timor, which led to the killing of a third of the Timorese population. The Pulitzer Prize-winning author and historian Greg Grandin once estimated Kissinger's actions may have led to the deaths of up to 4 million people. After headlines, Professor Grandin will join us to discuss Henry Kissinger's life and legacy. The U.S. Department of Justice has charged an Indian national with plotting to assassinate a prominent Sikh separatist leader living in New York City after federal agents allegedly thwarted a murder-for-hire plot. Federal prosecutors in Manhattan say 52-year-old Nikhil Gupta has been arrested in the Czech Republic pending extradition to the United States after an unnamed Indian government employee recruited him last May to carry out the assassination. Gupta allegedly offered a $100,000 bounty to a hitman who turned out to be an undercover DEA agent. The plot allegedly targeted Gurpatwant Singh Panum, a U.S. citizen, lawyer, and spokesperson for the organization Sikhs for Justice, which advocates for an independent state for Sikhs in northern India. Gupta's arrest comes just 2 months after Canada's government said agents of India's government, led by Prime Minister Narendra Modi, were directly involved in the assassination of the prominent Canadian Sikh separatist leader, Hardeep Singh Nijjar, in June. And ex-CEO Elon Musk lashed out during a New York Times event Wednesday when asked about recent advertiser boycotts over Musk's reposting of anti-Semitic content.
If somebody's going to try to blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money, go f*** yourself. But go f*** yourself. Is that clear?
F yourself, Musk said repeatedly. Over 100 brands have halted their ads on X, formerly known as Twitter, which stands to lose $75 million in ad sales by the end of the year. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Democracy Now! Is funded by viewers like you. Please give today at democracynow.org/give.
And coming up a little bit after some more music and that little clip there, I put it in about Henry Kissinger's death at 100 years of age. He died in Connecticut.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We remember Betty Rollin and again call out the Christian nationalist Oklahoma school superintendent.
Then we hear from two brave students
who are suing the religious president of a Texas public university who censored their drag show campus benefit.
I'm telling you, F. FFRF, they put out some great intro. That's the intro for what's coming up in a little bit. But here, celebrating the death of Henry Kissinger, here's a reminder, a deep history dive, because many people probably don't remember what Henry did. 4 million people. It's a 10-minute clip about Henry.
This news is funded by viewers like you. Please support our work at democracynow.org/give. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's agreed to extend its truce with Hamas for a seventh day to facilitate the exchange of captives. The extension... This news is funded by viewers like you. Please support our work at democracynow.org/give. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Henry Kissinger has died at the age of 100. To many in the Washington establishment, Kissinger will likely be remembered as one of the most influential diplomats in U.S. history. But around the world, including in Chile, East Timor, Bangladesh, and Cambodia, Henry Kissinger is remembered as a war criminal whose actions led to massacres, coups, and even genocide. Kissinger, who was born in Germany, served as U.S. Secretary of State under Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford from 1973 to 1977. He also served as National Security Advisor from 1969 to 1975. He's the only U.S. official to ever simultaneously hold both posts. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973 with his North Vietnam counterpart, Lee Duc Tho. During his time in office, Henry Kissinger oversaw a massive expansion of the war in Vietnam and the secret bombings of Laos and Cambodia, where as many as 150,000 civilians were killed in the U.S. strikes. As Kissinger told the military, quote, anything that flies or anything that moves. In South Asia, Kissinger backed the Pakistani military genocidal war against East Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh. In Latin America, declassified documents show how Kissinger secretly intervened across the continent, from Bolivia to Uruguay to Chile and Argentina. In Chile, Kissinger urged President Nixon to take a, quote, harder line against Chile's democratically elected president, Salvador Allende. On September 11, 1973, Allende was overthrown by the U.S.-backed general, Augusto Pinochet. Kissinger once said, quote, I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its own people.
In 1975, Henry Kissinger and President Gerald Ford met with the Indonesian dictator General Suharto to give him the go-ahead to invade East Timor, which Indonesia did on December 7, 1975. The Indonesian military killed a third of the Timorese population, one of the worst genocides of the late 20th century. Kissinger also drew up plans to attack Cuba in the mid-70s after Fidel Castro sent Cuban troops to Angola to fight forces linked to apartheid South Africa. At home, Kissinger urged President Nixon to go after Pentagon Papers whistleblower Dan Ellsberg, who Kissinger called the most dangerous man in America. The historian Greg Grandin once estimated Kissinger's actions may have led to the deaths of 3, maybe 4 million people. While human rights activists have long called for Kissinger to be tried for war crimes, he remained a celebrated figure in Washington and beyond, serving as an advisor to both Republican and Democratic administrations. We turn now to Greg Grandin. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning author and professor of history at Yale University. His books include Kissinger's Shadow, The Long Reach of America's Most Controversial Statesman. His new piece for The Nation is a people's obituary of Henry Kissinger. He also wrote the introduction to the new book just out, Only the Good Die Young, The Verdict on Henry Kissinger. Greg, welcome back to Democracy Now! So give us this people's history of Henry Kissinger. As we see in the mainstream media, he's hailed as the man who opened communication with China, led to a detente with Russia. What is your version of events?
Well, I think you summed up very well the version of events, the number of war crimes that he was involved in. From, you know, Kissinger's life is fascinating because it spans a very consequential bridge in the United States history, from the collapse of the post-war consensus, you know, that happens with Vietnam. And Kissinger's instrumental in kind of recobbling, recreating a national security state that can deal with dissent, that can deal with polarization, that actually thrived on polarization and secrecy, and learning to manipulate the public in order to advance a very aggressive foreign policy. I mean, we can go into the details, but I do want to say that his death has been as instructive as his life. I mean, if you look at the obituaries and notes of condolences, they just reveal I think a moral bankruptcy of the political establishment, certainly in the transatlantic world, in the larger NATO sphere, just an unwillingness or incapacity to comprehend the crisis that we're in and Kissinger's role in that crisis. They're celebratory, they're inane, they're vacuous. They're really quite remarkable. And if you think of, just think back over the last year, the celebrations, the feting of his 100th anniversary, 100th birthday, his living to 100 years. I think it's a cultural marker of just how bankrupt the political class in this country is. So his death is almost as instructive as his life.
Well, we had you on, Greg, when he turned 100, when Kissinger turned 100. In that interview, you said that the best way to think about Kissinger isn't necessarily as a war criminal. Could you explain why?
Because that is the way. I mean, Christopher Hitchens popularized in thinking about him as a war criminal, and that as a way of elevating Kissinger in some ways as somehow an extraordinary evil. And it's a fine line because he did play an outsized role in a staggering number of atrocities and dealing misery and death across the globe to millions of people. But there's a lot of war criminals. I mean, you know, this country is stuffed with war criminals. There's no shortage of war criminals. And thinking about him as a war criminal kind of dumbs us down. It doesn't allow us to think with Kissinger's, use Kissinger's life to think with, to think about how the United States. For example, Kissinger started off as a Rockefeller Republican, you know, a liberal Republican, an advisor to Nelson Rockefeller, who thought Nixon was far out of the mainstream and a dangerous sociopath, I think, as he put it. And yet when Nixon won, and he actually helped him win by scuttling a peace deal with North Vietnam, he made a speech with Nixon and then he went on, you know, into public office. And he thought Reagan was too extreme, and yet he made a speech with Reagan. Then he thought the neocons were too extreme, and he made a speech with the neocons. Then he even made a speech with Donald Trump. He called Donald, he celebrated Donald Trump almost as a kind of embodiment of his theory of a great statesman and being able to craft reality as they want to through their will. So you see Kissinger, as the country moves right, you see Kissinger moving with it. So just that trajectory is very useful to think with. If you also think about his secret bombing of Cambodia, yeah, and then trace out that bombing, it's like a bright light, you know, a trace of red running from Cambodia to the current endless war on terror. What was considered illegal? I mean, Kissinger bombed Cambodia in secret because it was illegal to bomb another country that you weren't at war with in the 1960s and 1970s. His old colleagues at Harvard, who all cold warriors, none of them peace liberals, marched down to Washington. They didn't even know about the bombing. They went to protest the invasion of Cambodia. And now, you know, it is just considered a fact of international law that the United States has the right to bomb countries that third-party countries that we're not at war with, that gives safe haven to terrorists. It's just considered commonplace. So you can see this evolution and drift towards endless war through Kissinger's life. You could also Kissinger's life is also useful to think about how, you know, as a public official, first National Security Advisor and then Secretary of State to Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, Kissinger created much of the chaos that would later necessitate and require a transition to what we call neoliberalism. But then out of office, as the head of Kissinger Associates, Kissinger helped broker that transition to neoliberalism, the privatization of much of the world, of Latin America, of Eastern Europe, of Russia. So you see that, you know, that transition from a public politician or public policymaker, and then going on to making untold wealth as a private citizen in this transition. You know, there's many ways in which Kissinger's life kind of maps the trajectory of the United States. You know, they celebrated him at the New York Public Library as if he was the American century incarnate. And in many ways he was. You know, he really his career really does map nicely onto the trajectory of the United States and the evolution of the national security state and its foreign policy and the broken world that we're all trying to live in as your last two statements.
Greg, I want to go to Henry Kissinger in his own words. He's speaking in 2016 when he defended the secret bombing of Cambodia.
Nixon ordered an attack on the base areas within 5 miles of the Vietnamese border that were essentially unpopulated. So when the phrase carpet bombing is used, it is, I think, in the size of the attacks, probably much less than what the Obama administration has done in similar base areas in Pakistan, which I think is justified. And therefore, I believe that what was done in Cambodia was justified.
So that was Henry Kissinger in 2016. He was speaking at the LBJ Library. The late celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain once said, "Once you've been to Cambodia, you'll never stop wanting to beat Henry Kissinger to death with your bare hands. You'll never again be able to open a newspaper and read about that treacherous, prevaricating, murderous scumbag sitting down for a nice chat with Charlie Rose or attending some black tie affair for a new glossy magazine without choking. Witness what Henry did in Cambodia, the fruits of his genius for statesmanship, and you'll never understand why he's not sitting in the dock at The Hague next to Milosevic." If you can just respond to that.
That quote contains more moral and intellectual acuity and intelligence than the entire political establishment, both liberal and both Democrat and Republican. It's a morally correct, it's intellectually correct, and you know it's more accurate than most diplomatic historians who trade on making Kissinger more morally complicated than he was. In terms of Kissinger's quote himself about Cambodia, there he's playing a little bit of a game. He's lying. I mean, he carpet bombed Cambodia. The United States massively bombed Cambodia and brought to power within the Khmer Rouge the most extreme clique led by Pol Pot. You know, when you massively bomb a country everything, you destroy all opposition, you tend to bring to power the extremists. And that's exactly why Kissinger is responsible to a large degree for the genocide that happened later on under Pol Pot. The bombing brought to power Pol Pot within the Khmer Rouge, which previously was a larger, broader coalition. But Kissinger isn't wrong when he links it to Obama's bombing of Pakistan. That was the point I was trying to make earlier. You know, Kissinger just had to do it illegally back, covertly back then, because it was illegal. It was against international law to bomb third countries, you know, in order to advance your war aims in another country. But now it's accepted as commonplace. And it is true. He's not wrong when he cites Obama's drone program and what Obama the continuation of the logic of the war on terror that started under George W. Bush. He's not wrong about that. And that's the line, that's one of the lines that you can trace from Vietnam and Cambodia and South Asia to today's catastrophe that we're living in.
Greg Grandin, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Pulitzer Prize winning author and professor of history at Yale University. He's author of Kissinger's Shadow, The Long Reach of America's Most Controversial Statesman. We'll link to your article in The Nation, A People's Obituary of Henry Kissinger. Happy belated birthday to Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Democracy Now! Is funded by viewers like you. Please give today at democracynow.org/give.
Well, I'll tell you, that one interview right there will give you enough reason to support those that support Radio Free Kansas. Get something to Democracy Now! Wow. So let's have one more hit dedicated to Henry. Dead Henry in Kent. His funeral is going to be in Kent, Connecticut, where he died. K-E-N-T, Connecticut. One more song, then on to Free Thought Radio.
Drawing out all the cash and like a sail. Did our boy do something rash? Suki Tatrin, Jenny Taibo, Lottie Lanyard, Sweet Lucy Brown, all the line found on the right there. Now that my king is back in time.
That was Louis Armstrong doing his rendition of Mack the Knife, which is, by the way, a excerpt from a German anti-fascist named, he's a playwright and a poet and a novelist. His name is Bertolt Brecht, B-R-E-C-H-T. Very interesting song, perfectly dedicated to the death of Henry Kissinger in Kent, Connecticut. Now, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, latest Free Thought Radio program.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and happy end of November. And hey, it's almost time for the war on Christmas.
Oh, I better get my helmet and my shield out so we can be ready for the big fight that's coming up.
We're just kidding. That's the religious right's take.
That we're waging a war on Christmas. I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and this is the November 30th, 2023 episode of Free Thought Radio. Tori Niels with Audio for the Arts is our engineer. She's in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio right here in Free Thought Hall, and Free Thought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and as regular listeners know, FFRF has two purposes, not just to wage that war on Christmas, but to educate the public about the views of us non-believers, and to educate the public and keep religion about this constitutional separation of church and state and keep religion out of government, which has been never more pressing cause for us. So we would love to have you join us if you're not a member at ffrf.org.
In this rise of Christian nationalism that we are experiencing right now. In the second half of today's show, we're going to hear from two brave students who are suing Texas A&M University for censoring their drag queen fundraiser on campus.
And before that, we're going to remember the life of TV correspondent and Right to Die advocate Betty Rollin, who was a freethinker.
Next week's the anniversary of the birth of the lyricist Ira Gershwin, who, with his composer brother George Gershwin, wrote many of the songs in the Great American Songbook. Ira Gershwin was born December 6, 1896. The Gershwin family was from a Jewish heritage, but they were not religious. Between segments today, listen for some Gershwin music, including Bess, You Is My Woman and Summertime, both from Porgy and Bess, as well as Our Love Is Here to Stay and The Man I Love.
And that last song is played by you, Dan, and we'll be talking about the separation of church and state in a few minutes when we hear from the Texas A&M students. This week on FFRS Ask an Atheist Facebook Live show, it was about the separation of church and state is not dead yet. FFRF attorneys Liz Cavell and Chris Lyne were joined by senior counsel attorney Patrick Elliott to talk about a rash of recent state church victories for FFRF, and we have settled three significant lawsuits in the space of a month alone this fall. We also won a case last spring that we talked about.
And during that Ask an Atheist show, they discussed four different cases, including our suit against a West Virginia high school where the students protested the administration after they brought in a Christian preacher during school hours.
Compelling stuff. The following week, more than 100 students, led by a senior Max Nybert, staged a dramatic walkout protesting this school-sponsored Christian revival. And it actually got national media coverage and even got covered internationally. So following the protest, nearly a dozen parents and students, with the help of FFRF, filed a high-profile federal lawsuit on February 17th of 2022. So Patrick, tell us about how the case was recently concluded.
Yeah, so at the end of October, we were actually able to resolve the case very favorably for the, again, about 12 plaintiffs that had participated. And really what they were after from the beginning was to make sure that this couldn't happen again, that other students were going to face the same type of problem with the next person to come through the school system. And so that's really what we accomplished. But, you know, the big thing is what the Board of Education did. That's really what our plaintiffs wanted. And so the board agreed to revamp its policies and adopt some provisions that would protect, you know, other students and future students. So that basically required them to train their staff every year. School principals and administrators were given a lot greater authority to monitor school events. And then the policies also were more specific because this was not the first problem we've had. I know Chris is aware of prior violations in this school system. And so we had to spell it out to make sure that other students wouldn't face these same type of problems in the future.
So you can watch that episode of Ask an Atheist right now on FFRF's YouTube channel. Just look for that Ask an Atheist playlist.
And a new episode airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon Central on Facebook Live on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the show. It repeats at 7 p.m. Central on Wednesday night.
Now, on a welcome international note, we're pleased to report on news out of New Zealand, where Dan and I had actually visited more than 10 years ago, and where traditionally we were aware, and we witnessed this ourselves, that the Māoris, the indigenous peoples there, had been missionized and tended to be more religious than the general population. We saw a lot of crosses. We heard God blesses. So there's a report that the religious beliefs among Māori have shifted significantly over the last two decades, and the number of Māori identifying as having no religion in the census between 2006 and 2018 has increased from 36.5% to 53.5%. So Māori identification with Christianity has fallen from almost half to almost 30%. So are Māori simply rejecting religion, or are they rejecting all supernatural phenomenon, including traditional Māori beliefs? And the research examined this apparent rise of atheism. So we're finding that this colonial history of religion is a driving force for Māori who identified as atheist or having no religion. And I'm sorry, I can't remember. I would say Māori. Māori, what do you
think? Well, I say Māori.
Māori.
I
think it's Māori, yeah. So anyway, that is welcome news on the international map.
Now to another foreign country, Oklahoma.
Yes. So the Oklahoma Superintendent of Education, Ryan Walters, is somebody that we have tussled with all year and in the past, sending multiple letters about his promotion of Christian nationalism instead of public schools. And so he is pushing back against a recent FFRF victory in Oklahoma, and he, in fact, issued a whole video about it denouncing the Freedom From Religion Foundation on Tuesday. He tweeted first that people of faith will never be bullied, and then this is what he said.
Today we see Prague public schools backing down to a radical atheist group. You know, we're going to continue to fight for religious liberty and religious freedom here in the state of Oklahoma. What we've seen as a group that's funded by George Soros, that is atheist, that is from out of state, has come in and targeted children that are initiating prayer in Prague public schools. Just as bad, we have Prague public schools bowing down to these bullies and telling their students that they're not going to allow them to initiate prayer anymore. It's outrageous. We have to take a stand for our students' freedom of religion, their freedom to express their religious beliefs, no matter what those religious beliefs may be. So what we've got to do is we've got to tell groups like the Freedom From Religion group, like the ACLU, we will never back down to your bullying antics. We will not allow atheism to be the state-sponsored religion of our school system. Not here in Oklahoma. You guys need to leave our kids alone. We will not stand for it, and we will continue to fight for religious liberty here in the state of Oklahoma.
Wow, I wish we were funded by George Soros. We're just funded by our members who join us.
Yeah, he is not a member. Huh. But, you know, that is a anti-Semitic trope and a conspiratorial dog whistle when Christian nationalists talk about George Soros funding everything. So we wrote an open letter in response to this, and we told Superintendent Walters that the Freedom From Religion Foundation will not back down in the face of his grandstanding and his bullying and his campaign to impose his personal and pernicious Christian nationalist viewpoints on Oklahoma citizens. But what this is about is that we had written a letter to the Prague Elementary School. It looks like the city Prague, but it's pronounced Prague in Oklahoma, which had been doing something very egregious. At this elementary school, they were hosting daily prayers, broadcast during announcements, and they were having children lead the prayer. And they were going so far as posting the full names and photos of these very young children who were leading the prayer on their Facebook pages to reward the children and trying to say, oh, the children asked if they could pray. Well, obviously, this is something that had been put on by the adults at the school and encouraging the children to come forward. And we pointed out that more than 60 years of clear Supreme Court precedent bars public schools from initiating, leading, or broadcasting prayer, including specifically student-led prayer. And obviously, 5-year-olds to 11-year-olds are not initiating this. It's such a terrible practice. So to the credit of the district's legal counsel, this clearly coercive and inappropriate practice was discontinued. We were informed that it was discontinued. Well, right after Walters goes after him, and this is not the first time he's gone after a school district for agreeing with FFRF that it's doing something violative of rights of conscience, they issued a statement that, oh, gee, the legal counsel didn't check with them first. Now, they didn't say they were going to go back to the practice, but obviously this is huge pressure on them. He's also pressured Tulsa. He's done so much to promote religion instead of promoting his public schools. So once again, we've called on the superintendent to resign because he's in dereliction of his duties.
You may have seen the ad with Ron Reagan promoting the Freedom From Religion Foundation on national television the last year or two. Well, it ran again this week on The Daily Show, and look for it again next week on The Daily Show, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
So the Freedom From Religion Foundation has had a non-court victory, and that is in Louisiana, where we brought the Calcasieu Parish School District back in line with the Constitution. A concerned parent had reported that their child's kindergarten teacher at Bell City High School in Lake Charles had been leading the class in reciting the Lord's Prayer every school day before lunch. So once again, imposing religion in a public school upon extremely young children. So Sammy Lawrence, who's our Annika Gaylor legal fellow, had written that letter, and it produced what we wanted. They did say we will stop doing that. So congratulations to Bell City High School for doing the right thing.
So another city I'm not sure how to pronounce in Washington, Puyallup. My brother lives in Washington, and that's how he says it, P-U-Y-A-L-L-U-P. The mayor of Puyallup, Washington, is hosting a prayer group in City Hall every Wednesday morning, and we are asking the mayor to stop doing that. The mayor cannot act in official capacity to promote private religion, and we got a complaint from an atheist who lives there who believes in the separation between church and state and that city resources should not be used to promote religion. And then another complaint we've made over in California, I know how to pronounce this one, Placentia, the Placentia Yorba Linda Unified Board of Education. I used to live right there. I used to live in Anaheim next to it. The Board of Education in Placentia is opening their board meetings with prayers. Just a couple of weeks ago, the president, Sean Youngblood, asked the Yorba Linda Mayor Gene Hernandez to lead a prayer to start the meeting. And one of a member in the community informed us about that. So we've taken issue with this entanglement of religion. And in particular,
because we have fought over this in California and we won a firm ruling by the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in a California case, Chino Valley, about a regular prayer practice at a school board meeting there. And obviously school board members are supposed to be teaching good lessons to students. We don't have prayer and religion in our public schools. Why on earth would they be praying at a school board meeting? So we had taken that case in Chino Valley, and we ended up winning $200,000 in attorney fees and costs. So there's very good precedent to stop that kind of entanglement in California school boards.
We're listening to a little bit of Best You Is My Woman by George and Ira Gershwin. We're going to take a break here. And after the break, we're going to remember the free-thinking TV correspondent and Right to Die advocate, Betty Rollin, and then we'll hear from some very brave students who are suing Texas A&M University. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. FFRF's TV show, Free Thought Matters, which broadcasts in 13 major cities around the country, features a musical show this week.
Yes, on this week's show, Dan performs some of his Free Thought songs before a live audience. And this week, he performs some of the songs that he wrote that explained his journey from deconverting from an evangelical preacher to an atheist. So let's listen to a bit of that concert.
Evangelism is like sales. Before you can sell something to somebody, you have to first convince them that they need it. Before you can sell salvation, you first have to sell damnation. So I wrote this song, one of the first times I wrote after I left the ministry, to explain that you can't win with original sin. Intelligent or kind you may have been, you just can't win. It was all over before it began. You were doomed in the fall of man. You can't win. I was dead. I was dead before my life had begun. I was dead because of something my great-great-great-grandparents had done. That's no fun. Adam and Eve didn't do any wrong. They were set up all along. They couldn't win.
And you can watch the rest of that concert on Free Thought Matters right now on YouTube, on FFRF's YouTube channel, on the Free Thought Matters playlist.
And if you live in one of the cities where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local TV, you can watch the show every Sunday morning. We call it the Un-Sermon. For stations and times, check FFRF.org/Free Thought Matters or go to our website and look under the news dropdown for Free Thought Matters.
And speaking of news, we want to remember the truth-telling Betty Rollin. The news came out last Sunday that she had died, that she had taken her own life as she wanted to in Basel, Switzerland, assisted suicide, death by assisted suicide, on November 7th. And we knew Betty Rollin slightly. We had bumped into her from time to time when she had covered the Freedom From Religion Foundation, when she spoke at our convention and some other lovely moments.
She hosted that show and wrote the show Religion News Weekly, right?
Yeah, well, she was a trailblazing woman journalist, a young female correspondent, starting out on national NBC TV and made international headlines when she wrote a book, First You Cry, in 1976 about needing a mastectomy after breast cancer at age 39. And Mary Tyler Moore portrayed her when they made a TV movie about it. And then she ended up writing a second bestseller, and that was called Last Wish, and that was about what she and friends of her mother had to do so that her mother could take her own life when she was suffering from ovarian cancer. So she became very interested in medical aid in dying, assisted suicide, and she spoke at our convention in 2003 about that. But Dan, you first met her, you can't remember when, the late 90s or early 2000s at our Alabama chapter's Lake Hypatia advance, not retreat. That was in rural Talladega.
She was doing a story about what do atheists and agnostics do to get together, and we had this big meeting down there in Alabama. She showed up. It was very hot and humid there, and she said, Alabama is a bad hair state.
Which is just a line I've never forgotten.
Well, and that's what a TV person would say. They
yeah,
want
when it's
hair.
Hot and humid.
But she was very sympathetic, and she enjoyed meeting him.
Very gracious, and then she spoke at our convention, but then also she was one of our early guests when we started Free Thought Radio.
Yeah, that's true, back in 2006. Let's listen to a little bit of our interview with Betty Rollins on this radio show in November 2006. She told us that she was raised in ethical culture.
The ethical culture society is kind of a religion, except it's a non-God religion in that they believe in ethical principles, but without talking about God. And it was good. We had classes, as I say, and how to be a good person. And a lot of the members are non-believing Jews. I would say most are. And there are a lot of those in New York.
That's right. There's a couple of ethical culture societies
right.
in New York, and there's one in Chicago.
Right. Chicago, yeah.
We
I did a story, actually, on non-believing Jews. Ooh. That is, Jews who feel tribal about being Jewish but who are not believers. Yeah. And there are more of them than you might think. When I suggested the story, my producer said, what? But if you're Jewish, you're Jewish. I said, no, 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 not necessarily.
If there were no difference between religion and ethics, then you wouldn't have to have a weekly show called Religion and Ethics News Weekly, which makes that distinction between the two.
Well, that's a very good point, Dan. Yeah, I get annoyed. I'm sure you get wildly annoyed, although I guess you're used to it, people who assume that the only way to be ethical is to be religious, which
yes.
an awful lot of people think. The only way to be moral is to be religious. And
we hear it all the time.
I'm sure you do.
So she was just a lovely, gracious person, and she was 87. And the New York Times ran an obituary, and it made it had cited a statement that she made to the Philadelphia Inquirer 1976, when she explained that she needs to tell the truth. They asked her, why did you write about your breast cancer? She was a truth teller, and she died the way she wanted to, and everybody should have that right. And she made a statement in going to Basel, Switzerland to do so. But she contributed so much to the world, and we want to honor her.
We're going to take a break, and then we're going to hear from two brave college students who are suing Texas A&M University over censorship of a drag show fundraiser. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. So earlier this spring, a secular group, as well several student groups at West Texas A&M University in Texas, wanted to put on a benefit for the Trevor Project, which is that group that helps to prevent suicide or suicidal ideation by LGBTQ youth. A very noble cause. And they decided to put on a benefit using drag queens, drag performances. And it was shocking to find out that West Texas A&M University President Walter Wendler sent an email to students, faculty, and staff canceling the student drag show. These are student clubs, bona fide student clubs, and he censored this event, and he had religious reasons for doing so. So we looked up these students, and we offered them our prestigious $5,000 Student Activist Awards. There are two of them that we hand out, and they spoke at our convention, and were introduced by none other than
two drag queens. So let's listen to their acceptance remarks. First, we're going to hear from Marcus Stovall, who received FFRF's $5,000 Stephen and Diane Uhl Memorial Out of God's Closet Student Activist Award for suing the school over that censorship. Marcus is 19. He's a junior majoring in political science at West Texas A&M University. He was introduced by the drag queen Brianna Banks.
Help me welcome our first award recipient from Texas, Marcus Stovall.
A little over a year ago at my new student orientation for college, I attended the organization fair. I was anxious and alone and acutely aware that I was uncomfortable in my own skin, but I was very determined to find somewhere I was going to fit in. First, I went up to every single religious group set up, and I asked every one of them the same question. Are y'all okay with gay people? In every group, every single one said no. They'd say I was welcome to come and change my ways at best, a flat-out no at the worst, but each one hurt just a little bit more. Once I ran out of religious groups, I walked up and down the rows of tables, eyes on one table covered in colors and flags that was pretty hard to miss, trying to build up the confidence to go and talk to them. But after making at least four or five passes, enough that the people sitting at the table were like, what is that person doing? I finally built up the courage to go up and ask one weird question. Are you guys gay? Followed by a question that makes my heart break to think about. Is that safe? Now it's a funny story of how I met one of my closest friends in the world and fellow plaintiff there and got involved with Spectrum to begin with. But I think that the choice of those two questions speak for itself. I've lived in the Texas Panhandle for my entire life. For those who have never been, you're really not missing out on much. It's unbearably hot in the summers, freezing cold in the winters, and in the spring and fall, it flops between the two in the very same day. The amount of wind and dirt that the wind picks up poses a pretty convincing argument that the region never actually left the Dust Bowl, and the handful of times we get rain every year, it floods. The nature tends to reflect the inhabitants as well. It's one of the most conservative regions in Texas and, by extension, the country. For just shy of 20 years now, I've lived in the Amarillo area and experienced the culture there. From billboards on major roadways claiming that vaccines cause autism and that evolutionists are going to hell, to having my car trashed in high school and having faggot yelled at me on my college campus, I've seen and lived the hate and intolerance the region breeds. While asking, is that safe, seems like a pretty silly question, I still remember the fear that just gripped me that summer afternoon as I built up the courage to take that step away from religion towards myself. Unfortunately, from what I've experienced the past 6 months, if I had to answer my own question, I'd say no. After our university's president, Walter Windler, who students have started fondly calling Windy, canceled our drag show based on little more than religious superiority, I witnessed a surge of hate I never could have imagined. I've been called a pervert, delusional, a degenerate, mentally ill, an enemy of the state, a freak, and many other things that I will not repeat in polite company. People send us threats, hate comments, saying that our country needs to bring back asylums and place those people in them where they belong, that not submitting to this gender assigned to you by God is rebelling against God's natural order, and one of my personal favorites, quote, the only kind of drag show we need around here is 50 miles per hour down a backcountry road behind a truck. The weeks around the show, I couldn't walk around campus without a police escort. And as we gathered to peacefully protest, state troopers surrounded us on the roof of Old Main with rifles in case one of the countless threats we received came true. I couldn't sleep, couldn't focus, couldn't eat, couldn't muster the courage to leave my dorm and go to class because all I could feel were eyes on me, judging me, hating me, damning me. Do I regret it? Not at all. Did it affect me? Absolutely. When I found out that the award I was receiving was called the Out of God's Closet Activism Award, I remember laughing at just how accurate that name was. I feel like my life has been a series of battles between the expectations of the religion I was raised in and the person I am inside. Religion used to be a huge part of my life. I'm not sure if I ever believed in God, but by God, I was afraid of him. I was raised religious, grew up in church, won a pair of headphones in the sixth grade for being an active and enthusiastic participant in youth group. By all accounts, I played the part of a devout believer. I went to youth group 3 days a week, invited my friends, looked down on my peers who didn't go to church, made a point of carrying my Bible around school and praying in the cafeteria, and always wanted to be in the clique of the cool girls in the youth group. For some reason, I never quite made it in. I'm not sure when all that changed for me. Maybe it was when I was 13 and I kissed my best friend, hidden from the eyes of the world and our parents, behind her closet door. The irony was lost on me at the time. Maybe it was when I became acutely aware that I was deeply, deeply uncomfortable in my own body and noticed that every time I imagined myself all grown up, I saw a man for some weird reason that probably doesn't actually mean anything and shouldn't be addressed. It could have been when I figured out that I was queer and, by definition, was now doomed to an eternity in hell with no hope of redemption as long as I had these thoughts. I never believed in a loving God. I believed in the boogeyman. Getting over that fear and finally leaving God's closet once and for all is a journey I'm very much still in the midst of. While writing the speech, I realized that despite everything I've done, there's still a part of me that is deeply afraid of being controversial. I'm afraid of offending religion. I'm out of God's closet, but like some kind of black hole, I can still feel it pulling towards me and trying to suck me back in. I've been told my entire life that my existence is inherently political. I'm the scary transgender person that the media is warning you about. I like cooking and embroidery in my aquarium. I always cry when the dog dies in movies. And the only music I listen to is 2000 emo. I'm obviously very scary, and you should be absolutely terrified of me. I can't tell you what God is. I can't stand up here and pretend that I know. What I can tell you is that the people who have had the biggest positive influences on my life have been the people that the church taught me to be afraid of. The first people to ever show me true kindness, empathy, human understanding, and love were the queers, the sinners, and the atheists. I'm pretty sure that I don't believe in hell, but if I'm wrong, there's going to be some damn good company down there. And this is why what we're doing is so important. Despite pushback and hatred from religious zealots like WT's own lovely Wendy, if I'm able to show just one person that it's possible to live your life how you want it and be genuine to yourself, it's all worth it. I remember what it felt like to be the closeted kid, alienated in his own skin, but far too afraid to do anything about it. I remember what it was like to fight against everything I was taught my entire life and go up and ask Bear, is that safe? If the protests we held on campus showed even just one student that it's okay to be gay and that you will be welcomed at WT, it was worth it. If the $7,000 we raised to donate to the Trevor Project saved even just one life of one queer youth, it was worth it. The fact that I'm able to stand in front of you all now and be comfortable in my own body means it's worth it. My name is Marcus. I'm a queer trans man. I'm an atheist, and I'm done hiding in God's closet.
That was Marcus Stovall, who receiving FFRF's Out of God's Closet Student Activist Award. And after the break, we'll hear from the other plaintiff, Bear Bright. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. We just heard from Marcus Stovall, one of the two students who is suing Texas A&M University, West Texas A&M University, for censoring a drag show fundraiser. Now we'll hear from the other plaintiff, Bear Bright, who received FFRF's Richard and Beverly Hermsen Student Activist Award.
And that is also $5,000. Bear Bright is 21 and is a senior majoring in civil engineering at West Texas A&M. He was introduced by the drag queen Latina Envy.
Yes, I am a local drag queen, but besides that, I am also an educator and mentor in the community. As an educator, it is our job and responsibility to inspire and empower youth voices, and by doing so is by being active representation in the classrooms. Not only am I a strong Latina trans woman, but I am also just a lover, and I inspire all my kids to do, whatever they can to make themselves feel comfortable in all of these spaces, because it is very hard to exist in this world where so many systems are created to be against you just because you're different. There is nothing wrong with the color of my skin, with how I feel inside. There is nothing wrong with me putting on just a little eyelash and lip gloss to stand here in front of you all. I I can get a little political because as a drag queen, it is our job to advocate for equal rights. And not only do we advocate for queer rights, but women's rights and immigration rights. As drag queens, we are given a platform. And if we are not using this platform for good, then why are we doing what we do? Another reason why we do drag is because drag helps teach you self-love. When I first started doing drag 2 years ago, I was still a closeted kid. I wasn't very closeted because you could spot me a mile down the road, you know, bouncing around. I'm super flamboyant. But to my family, I was very closeted. I grew up in a very conservative Christian household, and I learned to love and appreciate myself for who I am because I was taught that God or creator has made you to be how you were, and it is my job to live on his green earth being as queer and as fabulous as I want. because I was not created to be a sinner. I was created to be loved. When I was asked about being nominated to be a presenter here today, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. You know, you hear Freedom from Religion and you think, oh, this is another, you know, religious group. What are we going to be doing? Who are you guys representing? I was surprised to walk into this room this morning to be the youngest person in the room. I know, shade, no tea to any of you because you guys all look fabulous today. But I really was thinking and I was doing my research and I came across a little ad by Mr. Ron Reagan, and he ended his statement with, not afraid to burn in hell. And, you know, I let that sit with me for a bit. I was just kind of wondering, what does this mean? Like we're going to burn in hell? Like, is this really a thing that we're still afraid of? And, you know, I said, you know what? Same, sis. I am also ready to burn in hell. I would not be standing here 6'2" with my little kitten heels looking this gorgeous had I not been in love with the idea of burning in hell. I do drag because it has helped heal me in numerous ways. It has helped me appreciate life in more ways than I can count. And it has given me this newfound passion to be alive, to be representing not only myself, the trans community, the Latina community, but also to be representing Bear, right? So Bear and his colleague Marcus are awarded the scholarship for their bravery, but no amount of money is enough to award them for the sacrifice that they did. It's very selfless of them to advocate and stand up for the rights of their peers. They're sacrificing their own education, their future career goals, but it's because of people like Bear and Marcus who use their privilege as white people in these spaces to create safe spaces for us and for their peers and for themselves as queer people as well. It is with great privilege and honor to be standing here to honor Mr. Bear Bright from Texas.
Pneumono microscopic silico-volcaniconiosis is a made-up word, I hope you know, but it's actually in the dictionary, which you might also know. However, this specific word in the dictionary is also stated to be made up, and that is how I feel going to a public university where the president uses his Christian beliefs to cancel the drag show that me and my friends and a bunch of other friends decided to put on for charity. Walter Windler is a character. You might have heard a little about him. We call him Windy on campus, just to make him mad, preferably. There was this whole protest about it. We marched around the fountain. We chalked up the chalk all around the fountain. It got power washed away every single day. All the other chalk on campus sat there except for ours. Just a little taste of what Windler is like. He posted his whole feelings about what drag shows are as a message to the entire university, faculty, staff, and alumni, and students. I'm going to read an excerpt of what he said. "I believe every human being is created in the image of God, and therefore a person's dignity. Does drag show or preserve a single thread of this dignity? I think not." So we decided as students to do something about it. It wasn't specifically us. We definitely helped facilitate after and become an area where Buffs for Drag, the other students group, started the protests. They helped us get it all set up. They were always behind us the entire time protesting for the drag show to still be hosted on campus. Fortunately, it wasn't. We had to host it off campus, which cost us a good chunk of money. We had to do a fundraiser, a GoFundMe for it, in which we were able to raise enough money to host the event, to hire police for the event, to put on the event, and then still be able to raise $7,000 for the Trevor Project in doing so. And through this process, we also entered a lawsuit against the president. And I'm also going to be here to update you on that a little bit. So we got our court case back from Kazim Eric in the Panhandle. He is the same judge who tried to ban Mrs. Sulfaprone, the abortion drug. So he dismissed our case, saying that Windler had qualified immunity as a government official to cancel the drag show to protect children on a college university hosted by college students. So we have appealed to the Fifth Court of Appeals, and so hopefully before the end of next year we should get our case back from that. Thank you. But the fight is not over at WT campus. A few more things have come out recently that Windler has proposed. He has proposed first a textbook-free campus where the university will cover the price of all the textbooks for the students. But they don't have the money for that, so we're still going to be paying for the textbooks anyway. The second thing that came out was WT received a donation of $20 million from the Fairleys. They are a fairly conservative group of people in Amarillo. It was to create the Hill Institute, which is a conservative think tank with its goal of putting religion and education together on a university. So that's another thing that we are having to fight back with. But I know that of all the people that have supported me on campus, with if it's Buff Allies, the faculty-led support group, if it's the theater kids who are out there marching in drag as protests, that we are going to keep up the fight, at least against this and against the university for doing stuff like this. It's a public university. Anyone should feel safe and be allowed to go to a public university without fear of backlash or religion. So that is our current goal to continue going forward. We plan on putting on another drag show in the spring called the Don't Be a Drag Drag Show. And we're gonna go forward with this, and I'm really excited. We're gonna do the same thing. We're gonna try and host it on campus, and we can't wait for Windler to try and shut us down, because it'll add just more fire to the case, stating that it wasn't just a one-time thing. Thank you.
So that was Bear Bright, the second of our two enormously impressive $5,000 student activist awards this year. And you can watch those entire speeches at FFRF's website. Go to the convention link, and if you look for the 2024 convention under the archives, all the videos are up. Also, the transcripts of speeches run in our newspaper, Free Thought Today. And the upcoming December issue, which I've proofed is coming out soon, is a wonderful issue, carries their transcripts of excerpts of most of their speeches, and well worth your time to review and to watch. And they're very brave. And I loved all of these speeches, and the drag queens were great too. So don't miss that.
Well, that's our show for today. Free Thought Radio is recorded in the Stephen O. Friendly Atheist Studio. Our engineer is Tori Niels. We want to greet listeners to WOOM in Philadelphia, to WZML in Bryn Mawr, to WIDE in Madison, Wisconsin, and WMUU-LP in Madison, Wisconsin, WADR Community Radio in Janesville, Wisconsin, KEOS in College Station, Texas, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, WOOL in Bellows Falls in Vermont, New Hampshire, WRIU in Kingston, Rhode Island, WRFI in Ithaca, New York, and Watkins Glen. And if you're listening to us on the podcast, as many thousands of you do, give us a thumbs up and tell your friends and family to learn more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
You can also listen to the podcast We Dissent that features some of FFRF's female attorneys and others working for State Church Separation. It's a monthly podcast. Ask for information at ffrf.org or just join us because we have so much to work against and so much to work for. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live with
more. We got no plans, no plans at all. Evil man's always transcending. Fight her like sheep.
This is your moment of clarity from LeeCamp.net. I know you probably thought the number one thing we subsidized in the United States was man tits, but no, that's number two. The number one thing is ignorance. Think about it. Climate change causes massive drought. We then use our tax dollars to subsidize food so that we don't see the effects of that drought. By doing this, we subsidize our ignorance of the harm of climate change. Most of us don't understand the economy, so Wall Street is allowed to caress it, molest it, and digest it, and then run off with bags of money. Our tax dollars are then used to save these fucking Armani-clad poop farmers when they can't pay their debts. So everything keeps going, and we've allowed ourselves to remain blind. We've subsidized our ignorance. Running out of cheap oil, we begin fracking the fucking frack out of every square foot of the country. What are the consequences? I don't know. You don't know. Well, we don't need to know. Sure, there are reports of earthquakes and tap water that's now more combustible than Alex Jones sucking helium in a room filled with the parents of Sandy Hook students. But I've never seen any water catch fire. And at the end of the day, we can run our cars and heat our homes for way cheaper than on the other side of the pond. We've subsidized our ability to ignore reality. Running out of cheap coal? Then just subsidize mountaintop removal in the tar sands pipeline, or at least don't do the proper regulating and testing to find out what the harm is to the ecosystem and whether those mountains will actually grow back like we're told. Running out of intelligentsia? Ship them in from India. Running out of shrimp? Ship them from China. Running out of space to put our garbage? Ship it to people somewhere who would be happy to have our garbage. I mean, that garbage is probably filled with amazing shit, like clothes that were worn once and iPods that were thrown out because the color fuchsia isn't popular anymore, and perfectly edible underwear that's only missing the crotch section. Sure, you'll have to dig through 500 DVD box sets of the Twilight movies before you get to the good stuff, but it'll be in there. In the big spaceship that is planet Earth, the United States is paying a bukkake load of money to sit in first class so that we don't have to see the festering insanity going on back in coach. Most of this country is the Truman Show. Sure, things aren't great for a lot of people, but in many ways, we are blissfully ignorant. We're mindfully innocent, mentally negligent, and unknowingly indigent. We pay to maintain our ignorance. We subsidize our closed eyes. But I'm thinking about getting a little work done, so at least they'll be like young, hot closed eyes. And that's your moment of clarity for today. I'll be performing live in the coming weeks in Boston, Baltimore, and Stowe, Vermont, among other places. The details are at LeeCamp.net/schedule. And if you haven't already, please like my fan page at Facebook.com/LeeCampComedian, because I post shit there that you won't get anywhere else. Thanks. Keep fighting.
No plans at all. Evil man's always transcending. Fighter like sheep, swallow everything.
always simpletons or pretending.
morning and you follow through. You get your study boo. You make the joint jump like the gators do. The jim jam jump is a jumping jive. Makes you like your eggs on the Jersey side. Hip hip. Hip hip. The jim jam jumping jive makes you hip hip on the Mahalo side.
Have you ever seen the movie The Shining? The movie The Shining? Right. Jack Nicholson's in it. That crazy door scene where he uses a fire axe. Here's Johnny. Well, I think it's Here's Jack. He chops the doors down to kill his wife and kid. Well, Cab Calloway plays the kitchen guy. The guy in the kitchen. Cab Calloway is the guy who did that. Jump and Jive in the Roaring Twenties. Cab Calloway did that song. Before that was Helen Kane, I Want to Be Loved by You. So these are all available at the fantastic Internet Archives for free downloads. We're going to finish up the show with a medley of songs from Harry Roy, one of my favorite musicians and leaders of an orchestra during the anti-fascist war against Hitler and Mussolini and the Japanese emperor. These are broadcasts right before the war began, World War II began. Harry Roy and his Bat Boy Orchestra. To finish the show. We'll be right back.
Honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in the penny arcade. It's a Bonham and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Click and go there. Make a small donation. Don't hurt yourself. And let's get on with the shows. Radio Free Kansas is booming right now. Yeah, it's booming. Tell your friends about Radio Free Kansas. You'll have to share the link. It's the voice of Kansas.